And welcome to Unearthing Paranormalcy, the podcast where we dig into the paranormal and find normalcy in the topic. I'm Amy.
I'm Dave.
And I'm Austin.
I'm Chad.
And we're coming at you with part two of Superstitions. We actually have had so much fun doing this, we can't wait to do more. So we're going to just go ahead and get started with it.
Sounds good.
Let's go.
Black cats.
Awesome.
Oh, crap,
no, that's me.
Oh, it's
you? Black cat. You had voodoo dolls.
They look like
he's got black birds.
They look like little panthers.
Black cat. As one version of the belief goes, if a black cat crosses your path, bad luck will befall you. Another version claims that if a black cat walks towards you, then it brings good luck to you. And if it walks away, then it takes all the good luck with it. Christians wanted to rid society of all traces of other religions. They convinced the ignorant that black cats are demons in disguise, and thus wanted them to be destroyed. In the process, they also destroyed the kindly women who cared for the cats, believing them to be witches, which is kind of where the belief of witches always have a black cat.
Makes sense.
Being demons.
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 Demons. Being demons, a black cat crossing your path would create a barrier of evil, cutting you off from God and blocking your entrance into heaven. So I couldn't really find an actual origin of how black cats, you know, bring you good luck, but do kind of see how kind of the witches and black cats kind of thing got started. You can blame it on Christianity.
Well, my favorite cat was a black cat. Princess. She was the best cat I've ever owned, and she lived until she was like 14.
See, I'm pretty sure all cats are just demons anyway.
Huh.
So.
Well, if you look at their faces, I mean, you would definitely think
just
that.
Just the cats we've had growing up have all been...
All of our cats were nice, except for Thackeray and Rocky. But Rocky's getting nice.
I'd be upset too if my name was Thackeray.
What?
Thackeray was an awesome black cat in an awesome movie.
Yes.
He got ran over and then was raised by the dead.
Yes,
I mean,
but I'm sorry. The name Thackeray is just not a good name.
Thackeray.
But fun will throw up with a lift.
So the thing is, when it comes to these superstitions, you know, Amy was saying, it's like, I've realized I have a ton of superstitions. And it's like I was saying, oh, I don't really, you know, I don't think I have anything except when it comes to sports. But that's a lie. Because I've just remembered that every time I see a black cat crossing the street when I'm driving, I automatically start thinking, oh, shit. Like, what bad is fixing to happen? I mean, that is one thing that I always, like, I don't know why. And I love black cats, though. I have nothing against black cats. That's actually one of my favorite when it comes to the color of a cat. I like black cats, so.
I often wonder if Dave will let me keep it when I see one. I wonder if I could convince Dave to let me keep this one.
I can tell you the answer.
I can, too.
Ding, 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 ding.
No.
We do have a black cat that comes and hangs out in our backyard.
Yeah, we do. He watches me mow.
Yeah.
All right, our next one. Blackbirds.
Yeah, that's a restaurant over on campus.
It's on University and Boyd.
And it serves kind of a pub food. Some really decent drink selections. They have a pretty good happy hour. I have no idea. I've been there once and it was
And then they have a smoking bar upstairs called Bird's Nest.
I drive past it when they take the kids to school.
Poultry at this place?
I'm sure they do. Sell chicken.
They serve crow.
You got to question its origins.
So there's lots of different things about birds, you know, when it comes to blackbirds. So the crows, ravens, and blackbirds bring news and good passage and protection. Yeah. So. Are blackbirds bad luck? There is a superstition about it, especially in the Western world.
Sorry. You just lost your accent all of a sudden.
No, I did it on purpose. I didn't want to talk like... Actually, now I can't even go back to the accent I was doing, because I was sounding like I was from Minnesota.
Yeah, you definitely had a northern accent there.
Wisconsin, Ben Kissel, shout out. cheese, too. Y'all are fucking me up.
Watch your language. We get in trouble.
I know. You do use a lot of bad language.
Apparently, I'm the reason that she uses it because she listens to my podcast. That's what she said last time. She said,
there's a superstitious misconception about blackbirds. in Western society. And it's mainly because they're black. And black is associated with evil. You know, it's like in the Bible, they talk about light
and dark.
God, and they talk about night and darkness and evil and Satan and blah, 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 blah.
One thing Dave and I did look into the other day was the difference between ravens and black, or ravens and crows. And apparently it's the shape of the tail.
I thought there was a little bit of a beak difference, too.
Ravens can also become much larger than crows.
We don't have ravens here. We only have crows.
Are you sure?
Yes.
Well, we did have some raves. Hens.
That is uncommon here.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. And they make different sounds, too. Crows are annoying, too.
Whoa!
Gah!
Here's the thing. This is no joke, okay? So, in Southeastern, y'all, we're just there.
Yeah.
Okay? So, you know, I spent some time down in Tallahena, Oklahoma. Beautiful place. Anyways, the crows down there, this is no joke. They don't do the kah, kah, I mean, like, what you hear here in, like, the city. There are crows out there that literally go,
I remember you telling
yeah,
him.
Yeah, we had one. His name was Nelson.
Like the Simpsons.
And, yes, exactly. And I'm not even kidding. I had never heard a crow do that until I was down in the southeastern part, and it's a lot different than the rest of the state in Oklahoma, if anybody's wondering. Lots of pine trees and mountains and stuff. It's real beautiful. But the crows are different down there because they go, like, no joke. You could literally be sitting outside having a conversation with somebody and just out of nowhere, Nelson's back.
That's funny.
So, in Native American culture, blackbirds usually play a pretty big role when it comes to, they have a message, they're bringing a message, so if you see a blackbird in your path or whatever, your daily life, that means that somebody's trying to bring you a message. Blackbirds also, the crows especially, another thing in Native American is they're tricksters.
Yeah, I've heard that one.
Blackbirds' reputations as a bad omen is it's not based on experience or fact. So, but they kind of have a mixed reputation because, I mean, not all of them are considered bad. I mean, like I said, some can just be bringing a message, and it doesn't have to be a good or bad message. It could just be a message.
Well, you know, Poe and the Raven.
Nevermore.
Nevermore, that's it. Nevermore.
What was the message he was bringing?
Death is coming.
That very good book and movie. And the movie The Ravens. Or I think it's Birds. Is it Birds?
There's Birds.
Alfred Hitchcock.
Hitchcock's,
yeah.
Birds.
Okay, so yeah. Birds, what I was thinking of. Never mind.
I personally don't like birds much. Birds.
I love them. Birds.
Birds.
I like crows and ravens. I think they're really pretty. But I'm just not a big bird person.
That's just because we're into the occult.
It is. That must be it. All right. Our next one is the number 7.
Okay. So, me again. So, the number 7. 7 contains the number of 3, the 3 of the heavens and soul with the number 4 of the earth and body. And many things come in 7. You know, there's 7 seas.
7 dwarves.
7 dwarves.
The 7 seals.
Yes.
7 colors of the rainbow. Yeah. Okay. So 7 is very much associated with nothing but positivity. If you lucky number 7, you know, when you're playing that blackjack, so it's not blackjack, I guess it would be craps or whatever. You know, let's roll that 7 or whatever. I don't know. 7 days in a week. 7 notes to the diatonic scale. What's a diatonic scale?
It's a musical.
It's a musical term.
Okay.
Yeah.
I guess I should know that.
Yeah, yeah.
There's 7 letters in the Roman numeral system. So, 7 is nothing but really positivity. I could care less for the number 7.
It's supposed to be a really lucky number for a lot of people. I've never had it be a super lucky number. Oh. I've honestly had more luck with the number 13 than I've had any other number.
There's also 7 holes in a horseshoe.
That's why they put 7.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know. That's what I told you.
All right. Well, our next one. pneumonia from the cold air.
The general idea is that getting physically cold lowers the ability of the immune system. thereby opening up the body to sickness. This makes a sort of sense by looking at the reverse. Raising the body's temperature in the form of a fever is the body's way of fighting off infection. But this reasoning has recently proved to be untrue. There are still plenty of cultures that hold on to the belief that cold is the enemy of the body. And one of the many ways it is harmful is by causing illness. We've all heard the warning to wear a coat when it's cold outside or we'll risk catching pneumonia. When in fact, the majority of pneumonia infections occur in countries with tropical climate. The root of the cold air myth most likely stems from the fact that we tend to spend more time gathered indoors during the cold winter months, and when we're together in close quarters, pneumonia-causing bacteria can easily spread from person to person. Now, pneumonia thrives in tropical countries not because of the weather, but because nutrition is often poor, people tend to live in crowded environments, and there is also indoor air pollution from cooking fires.
So, real quick, did you say that the reason it's more prominent in tropical cultures, is that what you're saying?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I'm glad I didn't say what I was going to say. I'll go ahead and say it now, but I was thinking, oh, that makes sense. I mean, humidity, pneumonia is liquid or fluid in the lungs, so I thought, well, maybe the humidity had to do something with it, but I guess not.
Yeah.
Well, I know that a lot of times with pneumonia, it starts as something else. It starts as a cold that turns into a bronchitis that turns into pneumonia. Or it starts with a flu that turns into bronchitis that turns into pneumonia. Heck, our dad, he passed away of pneumonia, but he also had emphysema. But it was in the middle of the winter, but it wasn't cold winter. So, I mean, I don't know.
I think the whole cold is kind of a superstition as well because, I mean, when you get sick 90% of the time, I mean, it's a virus or a bacteria.
Yeah.
You know? So, I mean, being out in the cold really wouldn't affect it that much. I mean, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Well, I know you, Austin, you've had pneumonia a few times.
Oh, yeah. When I was younger, I had pneumonia quite a bit, actually.
I've never had it that I know of. I mean.
I actually had it, I had it about 2 years ago, actually.
Yes, I remember you had it when you were working at the shop. Yeah.
Yeah. And, it's fun. You like coughing and...
So I've been coughing for about 2 weeks now, but mine's all allergy related and...
Well, I mean, who knows? You actually could be getting...
I could be getting bronchitis,
That or the walking pneumonia, which is not it's not as intense as, like, just full-blown pneumonia. And I think they call it walking pneumonia because it's not as intense, obviously, therefore you can still conduct a pretty much normal lifestyle. You just cough a lot.
Mine is definitely a lot of allergies, but if I take my medication, I'm okay.
Right.
All right, our next one. Let's go with 666.
So surprisingly, there's actually not just a whole lot on 666. I mean, everyone knows it as the number of the beast, the sign of the devil, or the number of the devil. But that's pretty much all you would find. I did look up and find some cool things. There are actually a group of people who are afraid of the number 666, and those afflicted with this phobia, and now forgive me because I will pronounce this absolutely horrible. It's a very long name. They are called hexacosio-hexaconta hexaphobics.
Yeah, I remember practicing that word the other day with you. That's a good one.
And then this superstition dates all the way back to the Bible. 666 is given to the number of the beast in the book of Revelations. The beast is often considered Satan. According to State University of New York at Buffalo, anthropologist Philip Stevens, the writer of the book of Revelations was a writing to persecute Christians in a code. The number and names in the book are contemporary references. Three sixes in a row is probably the numeric equivalent of the Hebrew letters in the first century Roman emperor, Nero. So to me, it sounds like the 666 isn't the number of the devil. It just kind of grew into being that. It was just more of the number of the beast, meaning the things that Christians were wanting to look at as being bad or evil.
Yeah.
Which was damn near everything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If it wasn't in their belief system, it was evil.
Mm-hmm. So that's kind of where the number of the beast came from. 666 and Number of the Beast is also a really good Iron Maiden song. one of my favorites. I don't know. As being someone in the cult, the occult genre, 666 and the Number of the Beast is kind of a really prevalent thing. It's really, you know, on a lot of things. It's really cool. But I was really kind of disappointed to realize everything I was reading was, it's the devil's number. It's the devil. It's the devil. So, and it wasn't, couldn't find out a whole lot of cool information.
Well, in numerology, the number 666, is, from what I remember, is the purest form of love. Six is, I guess, a love number, and 666 would be the purest form of love.
No, it's interesting you say that, because in the Tarot of the Rider-Waite, six is the card of the lovers.
Yeah. Yeah, the numerology is also love, so... 666 in numerology is the purest form of love. And I learned that from an old co-worker that used to work with us, Nicole. All right, our next one is Lucky Pennies.
Lucky Pennies.
See a penny, pick it up. All day long, you'll have good luck.
And that's exactly what I was going to start this next segment off with, Amy Ardrey.
All right, go ahead. You can do it now.
No, I don't need to. So, as Amy just said, you know, find a penny, pick it up. All day, you'll have good luck. All day long, you'll have good luck. Nobody knows where it really came from. Different cultures have different beliefs. I mean, it's all technically a good thing. You know, they say if you see a penny, you should pick it up, but you shouldn't keep it. You should always give it to someone else, essentially, turning it over with the penny heads up position. Passing it on, you know, to good luck to a friend or a stranger, something like that, to keep the luck continuing to further along throughout the world. Different cultures, though, you know, they have their own stories related to the lucky penny. One is in Ireland, Northern Europe. The pennies originally belonged to mystical creatures such as fairies, leprechauns, and pixies. When someone happened upon a lucky penny in this part of the world, they were to spit on the penny and throw it into nearby bushes or foliage, so that the little creatives could access them. In exchange for tossing the lucky penny, the human finder would receive future good luck and fortune. Kind of a fun one.
Yes.
You know, when you take something from a leprechaun, comes back and tries to bite your arm off.
Well, I know that there's also a thing, oh, it's a poem or something about loved ones from in heaven leaving pennies for you to find.
Right.
I've heard that one, too.
And then there's kind of another one that's kind of weird or kind of funny. You were talking about it earlier, actually, with wedding. What was it, the wedding?
Oh, yeah, putting a penny in your shoe?
Yeah, yeah. So yeah. It actually, it says something old, something new, something borrowed, something blue, and a lucky penny in the shoe.
I actually, I was going to throw that one in there, too, because I've always heard it as something old, something new, something borrowed, something blue, and a two pence in your shoe. But one of Mom's friends had a 2 cent euro that they sent me to put in my shoe for our wedding. So I had like a 2 cent euro in my shoe when we got married.
Because that depends.
So,
and another one is, you know, like really ancient times. Finding a penny on the ground was good luck because it was believed in ancient cultures that metals were gifts from the gods. And so,
kind of are. I mean, that's the sun, right? For gold.
Right. And so, if you found a copper penny on the ground in ancient times, you picked it up, it was a sign of protection from the gods. They were literally protecting the ground that you were walking on, which was protecting you from, you know, anything negative happening.
Hmm.
So, yeah. Chicken to China, the Chinese chicken.
All right. All right, our next one is going to be never put a purse on the floor. This one is mine.
Unfortunately, I do that all the time.
I do too.
I don't carry a purse. What are you talking about?
Although I was unable to find the actual origin of this one, I did discover it in a Chinese feng shui, and it's the saying is a purse on the floor is money out the door. And I mean, it makes sense because a purse on the floor is easier to steal. You know, if you've just got it sitting there next to you, somebody can just walk up and steal it. Another thing is that placing an item on the floor is considered a sign of disrespect. So since your purse often carries your money, credit cards, and checks, it can be viewed as disrespectful. And if you don't respect your money, it's not going to stick around. I discovered this is why I'm broke, is because I always put my purse on the floor. In fact, I think my purse is probably on the floor right now.
Also probably because there's not cabbage in your wallet.
Yes, I don't have cabbage in my wallet.
So you're suggesting that when your purse is on the floor, the money inside gets resentful?
Yes.
And then it just leaves. I've had enough of it.
It decides to hop its little way to that store to buy those things that you have.
It could also have something to do with the fact that the floors are usually an abundance of germs. And you could get sick as a germ stick to your purse and you carry your purse around. And then with nowadays, nowadays purses can cost tons of money. They can cost house payments. I personally am cheap and don't spend over $30 on a purse. But there are some people who spend hundreds and thousands of dollars on purses. And sometimes expensive purses can be resold for at over 50% of the original value. And some even... the high-end limited edition bags can be sold for more than retail prices. So if you get it all dirty from laying it on the floor and kicking it around on the floor, then you don't get the money back. That's another way to look at it, too. There are ways that you can prevent putting your purse on the floor. One, you can just sit it on the table next to you. But nowadays, our purses tend to be quite large. So it's not like a little dainty little handbag that you sit on the floor.
It's still pretty easy enough to put your bag on the floor. You just don't put it on the floor.
Yeah, there's
simple fix.
Well, you can put it on the chair next to you. They actually sell little purse hooks. We actually have some of those at our shop. Or you can just not carry a purse. And there's actually, I know a lot of women who just don't carry purses anymore. Now, I always carry my purse because I've always carrying 100 different things for 100 different people. But
see, I wear cargo pants, and that's a dad's purse.
Oh, yeah, it is.
In fact, our daughter was like, Mom, why do you have a diaper in your purse? You've got a diaper bag. I'm like, well, if I ever don't want to carry the diaper bag in, I got a diaper in the purse, so I don't have to worry about it.
No, you'll be slinging that purse around with you. No,
yours is actually on the chair right here.
See, it's not on the floor. Yay! That's what I got for not putting your purse on the floor. But I definitely do it. Usually when I do it, I have my, like, have it between my feet, just sitting on the floor. In my office, sometimes it just sits on the floor next to my desk. So. All right, next we have itchy ears and itchy palms.
Yeah, it's itchy ears and ringing of the ears.
Ringing of the ears, sorry, yes. Itchy ears and ringing of the ears. I have itchy palms.
If you have itchy ears and ringing ears, you probably have an ear infection. And you go to a doctor, probably some antibiotics. No, so there's about 6 billion different things on this. So one of the probably most common ones that people will know about is if your ears are itching, somebody's talking about you. They're usually saying something good about you is what they say. That's probably the most common one here in the Western world. But there are many, many more. So the shell is considered a symbol of birth related to the vulva in Hindu mythology. Tells us that the sun god Sira's son, Karma, was born from his mother's ear.
Gods are always born in the coolest of ways.
Was it, who was born out of Zeus's head?
Athena.
Athena, yeah, born out of Zeus's head.
She's like a tumor.
They didn't really have a kid. It was really just a tumor. It had brain cancer.
He's like, this headache.
Well, then, you know, he ate a bunch of his children, too, so...
So he also had a bunch of illegitimate children.
Was that?
No. That was Cronos ate Zeus, and they ate a bunch of his brothers and sisters.
Cronos.
Yeah.
So a lot of this, like the one that you think somebody's talking about, you have like a burning or itching in your ear. It's actually traced back to about medieval times. Means that somebody's talking about you. There may be anxiety to know if the person is speaking of negativity or positivity. So if one was to have a ringing sensation in the ears, this would mean that there could be death soon, and that's the death of a friend or relative. Luckily, this misfortune may be turned into an advantage, and in this case, this had to involve a friend. Then you had to ask the friend to pick a letter from in some random order. This letter then will be the initial of your fortune or of your future spouse in case you are not married. If you get a tingling sensation in your ears, then this would be an indication that there is a person somewhere who is talking about you, and this may be in a negative or positive manner. So I guess it's not always positive. It could be either way. So That was really weird. I really don't understand what I just said.
So basically, if your ear is ringing, then somebody's going to die. You know what? There's not enough death around me because my ears ring all the time.
I say mine ring at least once a week.
And then if it get and then
it can be turned into a positive, an advantage in this case, because it could involve a friend that you had to ask the friend to pick up a letter.
So I guess if it's ringing and then you have a friend pick a letter, that's going to tell you, it's like...
Well, I can say if that's how it is, I'm going to have like 1,200 wives.
Well, you have to have a friend pick a letter. So next time your ear's ringing, you turn to Eli and say...
Well, I know, but if I do that to every...
Give me a letter.
Every time my ears rang, and every time it was a different letter, I would have a bunch of wives.
Different lifetimes.
Because literally, my ears ring at least once a week, if not multiple times a week. Oh, yeah.
My ears itch all the time, so I guess people are always talking about me. But...
So I guess, and even in some time, in some period of time... They would say, depending on what ear was itching or ringing, would depend on what that person was saying, positive or negative. So, if it was the right ear, then it'd be good things. If it was left ear, then it would be bad things. So,
I'm pretty sure my ring's just from, like, brain cancer or something.
So, yeah, that's kind of what I was thinking, too.
Now, there's a lot of that where the right is associated with positive and the left is associated with the negative.
Yeah.
I think a lot of these superstitions.
That's because left-handed people are weird. No. No.
My mother's left-handed.
I know a lot of left-handed people. My best friend's left-handed.
Is that left-handed?
Emily.
No, I was going to say Rocky.
All right, so our next one is thunderstorm superstitions.
So thunder is usually a bad omen, as evidenced by... All these different things are going to happen. There's one for each day of the week. If it thunders on a Sunday, the death of a great man will follow. On a Monday, the death of a woman is foretold. On Tuesday, in early summer, there will be a good harvest. On Wednesday, the threat of war and death of harlots. On Thursday, an abundance of sheep and corn. On Friday, a man of note will be murdered. On Saturday, a great disaster is going to occur. Pestilence, death, an uneven number of thunderclaps in quick succession will bring good luck. Likewise, thunder from a clear sky foretold good luck. It is said that thunder in February is followed by thunder on the same date in May. The first thunder in spring is a sign that winter is broken. Likewise, the first thunder in spring wakes up the snakes. Some believe that ringing bells can charm thunder away and make the thunderstorm move away.
Okay, so the next time we're having a tornado bells!
Hang on, let me finish this. But making noise during a thunderstorm will cause bad luck, and playing music will cause extremely bad luck. So, from this, I'm getting a lot of bad luck because normally when it's raining and storming, I like to play music. Or just have a radio playing.
So you are the cause of the Oklahoma bad weather.
No, I don't cause bad weather. I just get bad luck for myself.
Oh, you just get bad luck for yourself.
To prevent evil occurrences during a thunderstorm, a candle should be lit and left burning until the storm passes. If you have no candle, make the sign of a cross on your forehead or arm or chest.
Sign of the cross.
So if you make a cross on your forehead, chest, or your arm, it's a way of... preventing evil occurrences during a thunderstorm. Dreaming of thunder or lightning is thought to be a good omen, foretelling good news from afar and increased wealth. Thunder after a funeral means the spirit of the deceased has gone to heaven. A storm with thunder and lightning during a wedding ceremony foretells of bad luck for the couple, which I've also heard is rain on your wedding day is actually good luck.
Yeah, that was mine.
So
yeah, you get a free diamond ring.
Lightning and thunder will sour milk and cause eggs to rot. Fish will refuse to bite when it's thundering. However, many believe that it's actually best to catch catfish when it's thundering. So this next one, I'm gonna tell our listeners, do not try this.
So we have do not try this at home. So
we have a disclaimer.
This is a very old superstition that's really counterintuitive. This is the old superstition. To have iron or steel about you during a thunderstorm will bring good luck. Once again, do not try this at home. 'Cause metal conducts electricity, and you'll get hit with lightning and probably die. So don't do it. That's pretty much it for the thunderstorm.
See, I've heard, well, here's my thunderstorm superstition that I actually do. I will not take a shower during a thunderstorm.
Yeah. Yeah,
yeah, I mean, I've heard that one.
And not to talk on the like a landline during a thunderstorm.
Yeah, I don't hear about that. The whole taking a shower.
Well, yeah, I mean, you don't want the tornado siren to go off and you gotta
get... I mean, what are you supposed to do, run naked out of the house?
Well, it's more about...
I mean, I'm down, but...
Well, it's more about lightning striking the house while you're in the shower.
And water conducts it. I always heard
yes, water that. Conducts electricity, but lightning striking the house doesn't actually
Mythbusters
work.
Mythbusters did it, and in the shower, it fried the dummy. And the phone didn't, but the shower did.
Well, I shower all the time when it's thundering.
I've always heard
that it was not me, or not what I've heard. Wait,
fucking. I've heard that, not that I've heard.
What I've heard is not striking the house. It's that if it strikes like one of your water lines, like if it were to hit the ground and, you know, hit where your water line was, where your the water's coming from in your shower, that it could conduct.
Yeah, but I think there's also a lot more about tornadoes, and if you're taking a shower during a tornado, then although hiding in the bathtub is one of the places we go, so therefore if you're already in there, you're good to go, right?
Right. Yeah. You can just turn it off. And
now that we have a storm shelter, I don't have to do that anymore. Storm shelter is far more comfortable than everybody piled into the bathtub. All right, our next one is toasting with water.
Yeah, this is kind of a funny one. So, don't you know, toasting with water is supposed to be bad. They say that you're better off actually toasting with empty glasses. Toasting with water means that you're wishing death upon someone, or even death upon yourself.
That's sinister.
As this liquid reflects your future watery grave. So,
well, I've toasted with water a lot, being the fact that I don't drink anymore.
A lot of people have.
So, I mean, yes, being a normal human being, I do, you know, sometimes wish death along with a lot of people. It has nothing to do with me toasting with water, but...
Right. So, this all dates back, actually, to ancient Greece. The superstition is embedded in history, you know, according to Greek mythology. The dead would always drink from the river Lethe in the depths of the underworld in order to forget their past. As a result of this story, the Greeks would always toast to the dead with glasses filled with water to symbolize their voyage via the river to the underworld. So, you know, I guess just it kind of is just a bad luck thing. You're pretty much toasting to the dead and wishing death upon yourself.
What about sparkling water?
It's still water, man. They just add a little carbonation to it. So
it's actually gross. I hate sparkling water.
It says right here, celebrating glass filled with water, a dull and neutral drink was not appreciated by the gods, who would shower down ill fortune on anyone who dared to do so.
Our next one is mirrors on the porch.
If you've ever seen a mirror hanging on the porch of a home in the South, be assured not a single spirit has passed through the place. This particular superstition is meant to protect the home and goes back to Cajun country. Cajun folklore says the devil can't pass up an opportunity to look at himself. They believed he would stare at himself until morning and have to flee at the daylight. Others believe the mirror will catch any evil spirits attempting to enter the house.
Interesting. Our next one is birds in the house.
Okay, so...
We're back to a comedian.
I'm from Minnesota, don't you know. I need a Coke. Give me a Coke and a Coke.
I have Pepsi.
How about a soda?
I want a soda. Give me a soda and some cheese. There's a lot of superstitions involving birds, and a lot of them involve, you know, good and bad luck. When it comes to the house, If a bird flies into your house, it signifies an important message is on its way. If that flying bird happens to be white, it means that there will be a death, though. So that's kind of the bad side. It could be good or bad.
So that's why Walmart is prospering so much, is because they have a zillion birds that fly into their store every day.
There's always a few of them chilling in the rafters.
Always.
Every time I'm in there. They're usually cute little sparrows.
It's interesting that they say the white bird is the one that brings death. I would assume it would be the
black bird. And that's actually what we talked about earlier, is that the black signifies evil and death and stuff like that. So, yeah, I found that kind of odd.
Yes.
Good contradiction.
It is. Yeah.
It really is.
Well, I know, like, doves are supposed to be messengers from above.
Right. What does it signify? A loved one?
Yeah.
It signifies
a loved one.
Now, that's only if they're solitary, right?
No.
Oh. Okay.
No, I always go back to when Dad died. We had one of the ring neck doves.
Yeah, ring neck.
They've got like a gray circle around their neck.
Yeah.
We had one appear that spring after Dad died, and it would just sit over on, there's a street light across the street from us, and it would sit on the street light. The next year there were two of them. The next year there were three of them. And then the next year there were four of them. And so we had two couples of doves that were hanging out around here. I don't know. It all started after Dad died. But it also, they also represent motherhood and the maternal feeling.
Yeah.
Maternal instincts. And I was pregnant at the time. I was 3 months pregnant when Dad died. So, I don't know. It was interesting. I have only had two kids. I haven't had four. But
So really, like, I mean, most everything actually, you know, it's, it says birds in the home, but really, I mean, like, what the topic is, but really it comes down to the superstition is if a bird tries to fly into your home, it means that there is, like, death coming, pretty much, is what it's saying.
Sometimes it's to the bird as it flies into your window because it...
it actually says that on here. It says that... Other versions have the bird enter the home through an open window or door. Should the bird get access into your home, no visible means of entry. Superstition is that the equivocal to the intruder alarm tunes to sense death itself going off. The bird's flying in, somebody's dying.
My goodness.
And crows have a really bad rap because it's really a lot of crows. Poor crows.
I think Mom usually has one or two birds fly and break their necks on her windows every year.
But they're outside now.
Yeah, they're outside.
I don't know if that's every year. I think that's like every month, the way you talk
about. All right. Well, that's all of yours, Austin. So, if you...
Yeah. So, sorry for the crappy information. I wasn't really prepared for this, but I really wanted to be on the podcast. So... Next time I'll do better, I promise.
It's all good. Our next one is going to be itchy palms. That one's mine. According to the superstition, if your palms itch, that means money. Whether money flows in or out depends on which palm itches. If it's your right palm that itches, then that means you'll be getting money. But if you scratch it, you will lose it.
Back to the right palm, you're lucky.
That explains why I never get money. It's only my right palm that'll itch, and I always scratch it. So, damn, now I know.
If it's your left, then that means the money is being paid out. So you may scratch that hand, and it'll stop the flow of money. Yeah. So if your left hand itches, scratch it. If your right hand itches, suck it up. not much is known about the origin of this superstition. It's believed to originate with the Saxons who believed that rubbing deceased hands on silver cure, or no, diseased hands, not dead.
Well, then I'm hearing
dead hands. If you rub dead hands on silver, it heals them. That's what Amy was about to say.
Yeah, that makes sense.
If you rub diseased hands on silver, that will cure them. The Saxons were German tribes who settled in large parts of Great Britain during the Middle Ages. Our next one. Painting the door red.
All right.
Painting the roses red.
Painting the doors red is actually, and there's not a whole lot on it. In feng shui, a red door symbolizes the mouth of a home. Many doors are painted with a fresh coat of red just before the Chinese New Year to invite good luck and happiness. And in Ireland, a red door is supposed to ward off ghosts and evil spirits.
See, that's what I've heard. We have a red door.
Why would the Rolling Stones want to paint their red door black? Y'all don't know.
You lost me.
Paint It Black is the name of the Rolling Stones song.
I know. I see a red door and I want to paint it black. The point is, you're saying it's all good shit about a red door. I'm saying, why would they want to paint it black?
I don't know.
Rolling Stones, they're high a lot.
I don't like the Rolling
Stones.
It
sounds like y'all are high because it went over your head.
I don't like the Rolling Stones, so I don't listen to it.
I got it. I just didn't.
Well, I guess what song you're talking about, but I never knew that.
They wanted to invite dead people into their home.
Yeah, let's follow the symbolism of this. You know, I think that's.
They wanted to invite dead people into their home.
Yeah.
Paint the door black. Welcomes the dead.
Yeah, I don't even know that. The song.
Bottle trees. This one's mine too. I had never heard of bottle trees before this. But this is really interesting and they're really cool, and I think I want to get some for our garden. Glass bottle trees originated in 19th century Congo. Legend had it that an empty glass bottle placed outside near the home could capture roving evil spirits at night. These spirits would be destroyed the next day in the sunshine. One could cork the bottle and throw them into the river and wash away the evil spirits. It is also common with graveside memorials that would consist of plates attached to sticks or trees. These plates resembled mushrooms called Congo Poon. These two eventually came together and brought us... Dave even lost the
I'm sorry, we're all 13.
These two eventually came together and brought us the bottle tree. Now, I had never heard of the bottle tree, but when I saw pictures of them, I was like, oh, I've seen them. It's a southern tradition around here. Bottle trees can range from blue to clear to brown, but cobalt blue is always preferred. In the hoodoo folk magic tradition, the elements of blue of water and sky placed in the bottle, or the elements of blue are water and sky. The bottles are placed upside down with necks facing the trunk. Trees need not be thick. Thickly pop.
Fucking
amen. Trees need not be thickly populated with bottles. Malevolent spirits on the prowl during the night enter the bottles and they become trapped. Today, bottle trees have become part of like a folk art. Companies actually market them. You can buy them as like garden decorations. But it was actually really common. It's more of a southern thing around here. So we're not really southern, so you don't see a lot of it. If you do see bottle trees around here, they're usually like the dental ones. And it also, they're considered the poor man's stained glass window. Because you got all the different colored bottles on the trees and stuff. Mm-hmm. But also like the round globes that you see in gardens and stuff kind of come from this same tradition.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And so
what are we then? We're just like a melting pot.
We are. Well, Oklahoma's kind of a little mini USA geographically and everything.
Well, definitely geographically.
I would say that we're just kind of a mixture of it all.
Of everybody.
We're kind of southwestern, we're kind of southern, we're kind of midwestern. All right, our next one is walking over a grave. I know this, I've heard this one.
So walking over a grave is a superstition that I know I've heard of, like you said, you've heard of it. It's kind of a pretty it's actually one of the most popular grave superstitions. It's said when walking over a grave, that walking over a grave is bad luck. It is said that walking over a grave pins you as the next to die. It's also rumored that if a pregnant woman steps over a grave, the baby will be born with club feet.
You know what?
Yikers.
I walked over a lot of graves when I was pregnant, and my kids neither have club feet.
What are you doing walking over graves when you're pregnant?
My dad died when I was pregnant, remember?
No, I was thinking more of the Dean era, not the Kyle era.
No, there's not... I couldn't find just one, like, origin to this. The most believed story is in older graves, people without money were actually normally buried in the walking paths, cemeteries.
Yeah.
So people with money would actually have, the big grave sites with the big, headstones and all that.
Right.
And then the poor peasants would be just buried wherever there was space and mostly happened to be walking areas. So as these old graves would decay and the coffins would decay, they'd make sinkholes and people would fall. And so they started the rumor, not to walk on graves because you'll fall in. And it kind of just took off from there. Most common origin I've read about it. But it's definitely one I've heard of. I still try to this day when I'm walking through a cemetery to try to...
stay as close to the headstones is what I try to do, yeah. I do it more out of respect, too.
Yeah.
Like, I know that this is somebody's father, somebody's mother, that I don't want to walk over their grave.
Honestly, I'm the same way. I do it out of respect, too. It's not a superstitious thing. Yeah. I just feel like, in all honesty, when it comes down to it, it doesn't freaking matter. They're 6 feet below. You're not technically walking on them. But a respect thing, it's like, that way you're just not walking over. I don't know.
Yeah.
It's just,
I don't be like bad. I don't like being walked on alive. I don't want to be walked on dead.
I'm gonna be cremated, so
I don't care. You can throw me in a cardboard box and throw me in the dump. I'd be fine.
We've already discussed. You can't burn me. So
why?
She's terrified of being burned.
No. I don't really care. Once I'm dead, I'm dead. My body is useless to vessel. So
I've decided that in a past life, I must have been cremated, but I wasn't actually dead.
Dead. Kind of like being buried alive.
Yeah.
Bird
alive.
Between the bird and me.
All right, next one is four-leaf clovers. That one's mine, too.
Poor dad.
Old leprechaun.
I haven't done any of Dave's in a while, have I?
Well, he's only done like three.
No.
We've done like 40 out of the 50.
I've got one left. I have two left.
I have none.
I haven't really done a whole lot either, so. Four-leaf clovers. Unlike other superstitions, the four-leaf clover is pretty straightforward on how it became meaningful. If you ever tried to find a four-leaf clover, they're kind of hard to come by.
Right.
So you're considered lucky if you find one. In fact, they've done surveys and figured out that your odds of finding a four-leaf clover is 5,000 to 1.
That's pretty decent.
A four-leaf clover is actually a genetic mutation in a... white green. Clover.
Yeah.
Green.
Who here has actually tried to look, like, set and found a patch?
I've found one.
I have.
Yeah.
I actually one day was just standing on my porch and looked down and saw one.
Yeah.
Instantly. Was like, oh, cool. Picked it up, put it in my wallet, and carried it with me all year.
Well,
kind of like one of the cabbage.
Yeah. Did you put it next to it or did you put it on the other side of the wallet?
Different spot.
Well, the three of us went to the same middle school. And there was a big hill you set on. And... because there was nothing to do at lunch. So you sat on the big hill, and the big hill was covered in clover. And we would sit there at lunch and find clovers all the time. And then we'd stick the four-leaf clovers in our textbooks. And
I think I'm going to put a piece of cabbage, find a four-leaf clover, have those both in my wallet, and then I'm going to get a black-eyed pea that's raw and put in my wallet, too.
And don't forget your penny. You need
and my lucky penny. Mm-hmm. That's right. Well, I got to pass it on. You're supposed to pass it on and get it.
I'll find one and give it to you, and you find one and give it to me, and we'll just...
I find it disturbing that you're going to treat your wallet like a compost.
Let's see. Something that I had never heard, but I guess is a really common thing, is that the four-leaf clover, the four leaves represent faith, hope, love, and luck.
No, I didn't know that.
I'd never heard that, but that seemed to be something that I found on almost every site. The common, and I was like, this is not common to me. I've never heard this.
Right.
A big common misconception is the four-leaf clover and St. Patrick. Mm-hmm. St. Patrick actually used a shamrock, which is a three-leaf clover, because he used it to represent the Holy Trinity.
Yep.
Because his thing was to convert people.
Right.
The shamrock dates back to before St. Patrick, though, and is part of a Celtic ritual and folklore. So, It all dates back to Ireland. But that is the four-leaf clover.
You know what else I've heard about four-leaf clovers? It wards off evil leprechauns.
Oh, yes?
Yep.
It's also...
Watch the movies.
I don't know. I'll have to watch them.
Is there any good leprechauns?
Yeah, the ones that are after your lucky charm.
They're always after me lucky charms.
The other day we came home and there was a rainbow, and it looked like it ended right over our house. And Dave goes to our daughter. He's like, "Are you going to help me fight off the leprechaun if he's in our house?" She said, "Yeah, I'll go get the axe."
That is awesome.
She's a warrior.
Next.
Or a serial killer.
We have magpie.
The magpies.
Is that a bird?
Yes, it is a bird.
Lots of birds.
Lots of birds myths.
Birds and the bees.
In the Middle Ages and during the witch hunts in Europe, the bird was considered to be connected with witchcraft, just like crows, ravens, and black cats. Magpies are one creature that witches were commonly thought to shapeshift into. In another legend, they're cursed because magpies were the only bird that didn't sing or comfort Jesus when he was crucified. And the magpie was the only bird not to go into the ark with Noah. Instead, it sat on top, swearing and chattering as the world drowned. In many parts of the United Kingdom, spotting a single magpie is considered bad fortune. In German folklore, the magpie is seen as a thief. In Yorkshire, magpies are associated with witchcraft, and you should make a sign of the cross to ward off evil. In Scottish folklore, a single magpie seen near the window of a house is a sign of impending death, possibly because magpies are believed to carry a drop of Satan's blood under their tongue. In both Italian and French folklore, magpie's penchant for picking up shiny items is thought to be particularly directed towards the precious ones. A single magpie seen flying around a house denotes bad luck. To see a magpie perched atop a house means you should rearrange a journey. A single magpie seen on the way to church indicates that death is present. A single magpie denotes foul weather, arising from the fact that pairs of magpies only forage together when the weather is fine. In Norway, a magpie is considered cunning and thievish, sometimes wicked, but a playful and loud bird is also a bringer of good weather. If a lone magpie is seen, one should salute it to show respect. In most parts of the UK, people will salute a single magpie and say, "Good morning, Mr. Magpie. How is your lady wife today?" I was wondering if y'all were going to come alive.
And I love it. A magpie.
Hello, Sir Magpie. How is your lady wife?
Because by acknowledging the magpie in this way, you are showing him proper respect in the hope that he will not pass bad fortune onto you. And by referring to its wife, you're implying there are two magpies, which brings joy rather than sorrow.
What if that magpie has a husband? Where is the respect?
How can you assume all magpies are male? 2018, Dave.
Exactly. What if that magpie is a woman?
If you're in Canada, you're going to jail.
You're going to have to ask a UK person about all this. You could also spin around three times on the spot.
Dude, what is up with magpies? A magpie is not even a very attractive bird.
No, they're actually pretty. They are weird. They make weird sounds.
They're a little blue and white bird.
We don't have any here, so
no.
We don't have to worry about any of this. But if you're ever in the UK...
Other things you could do is you could pinch the person you're walking with. If you're alone, you can pinch yourself.
Oh, yeah, you can. Yeah.
You could also repeat the words "I defy thee" 7 times.
And there's a reason people think people from the UK are crazy. You walk by and they're just spinning in circles. I defy thee!
Pinching themselves.
We have quite a few UK listeners. We appreciate you. You're not weird. You're not weird because you listen to us.
Other things that they believe to prevent the bad luck include doffing your hat, spitting 3 times over your shoulder, or even flapping your arms like wings and pawing.
Ka-da! Ka-da!
to imitate the magpie's missing mate. One of the my favorites I read was you just point out the magpie to someone else. So you...
Sorry, go ahead. I got to interrupt.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. You're pointing out to somebody else.
They pass up into themselves, spin around 7 times, slap their wings.
You're like, shit, I don't have time to do all that. It's over there.
Damn it, Amy. I defy.
Every time you see a magpie, you have to spend a week. So you don't get cursed.
I'm just going to walk around England blindfolded.
It's like you go to work and you tell your boss, it's like, hey, I need that week's vacation. I saw like 3 magpies in the winter. I'm not getting work done for a while, so.
In ancient Greece, the magpie was associated with Dionysus and intoxication. In ancient Rome, the magpie is sacred and linked to the god Bacchus. In many parts of Europe, the magpie is honored due to the fact it warns people of the approach of wolves and armed men. In Korea, the magpie delivers good news and invites good people into your life. He is also seen as a village spirit. Therefore, in Korea, the magpie is seen as the symbol of good luck and happiness. And in China, instead of being a sign of misfortune, the European magpie is considered to be a lucky sign. The name is literally Happiness Magpie. It is thought that the magpie's song will bring happiness and good luck in some parts of China. The magpie is considered a sacred bird. In Mongolia, the magpie is considered a clever bird with control over the weather. In Native America, the magpie is considered as a friend and helper. In Native American folklore, wearing a magpie feather is a sign of fearlessness in some tribes, and the magpie is bold and has little fear. In South Dakota, there's a myth that all the animals had a race to determine if the two-legged animals had the right to eat the four-legged ones, or if it was the reverse. The bison was winning, but the magpie was sitting between its horns. As they got close to the finish line, she burst forward and won.
Okay, so, here we go. I think I've heard the word magpie twice. I think I've just heard magpie more than I'll ever hear it ever again.
Yeah.
So,
magpies are always single.
Yeah.
Or in England, they were always bad if they were single.
Yes.
Oh, yeah, only
twice. Say hello to their wife.
Well, see, wasn't there. What I find interesting is that.
You know what? Maybe they're just, you know, having a hard time finding the right one, okay?
My only thought is the only reason that they're considered bad luck in the UK is because you have to do all this shit to where, like, so you don't have good luck. That makes it bad luck to see one anyway, because you got to pinch yourself and turn around and squawk like a bird and all kinds of randomness. Whereas the other places are like, yeah, they're cool. We like them. They don't have to do any of that shit.
Right.
So I feel like that's the whole problem. That's why they're unlucky, because you see one and it takes half a day to get rid of the bad luck.
Exactly. Yeah, I don't want to see a magpie in England. Ever.
Just make sure you're with somebody so you can point it out every time.
Right. Yeah, so fuck magpie. All
right, our next one is
Magpie number 2.
Broomsticks over the door. Broomsticks over the door. If you guys will all turn and look, I have a broomstick over my door.
She's talking to us, not the listeners.
No, the listeners. Turn around and look. one of the earliest forms of a broom is known as the besom. These were made from twigs tied with to the handle. The bristles can be made of various materials, such as straw, herbs, and twigs. The shaft is round and represents the branches of the tree. This associates the broom with the tree of life, which is an important symbol in ancient pagan Europe. Traditionally, they are made from hazel wood, and the bristles are birch twigs. These brooms are often found just inside the dwelling, hanging with bristles up to ward off evil spirits, negative energies, and to protect the home and all who dwell within it. It can also be found hanging over a door with the bristles facing the direction of the door, the opening of the door. They're relatively inefficient at cleaning, as a cleaning implement, and need constant repair. Today, the besom brooms are crafted and sold in garden centers and as an outdoor broom. You can also find them in decorative scent versions. Cinnamon is common. In fact, mine was actually a cinnamon one that I think I found at a Dollar General.
Sounds like more like an ad for Bed Bath. Cinnamon, vanilla.
Basically, the broom signifies sweeping the negative energy out of the home.
Which makes sense.
Yeah.
Sweeping dirt, the dirtiness.
And I don't know who else remembers this, but in the 80s, it was really common for people to have brooms hanging on their walls. And usually it was by the doors or by archways.
I don't think any of us remember this.
I wasn't alive.
Yeah.
Okay. Dave, you and I were alive in the 80s. I remember the late 80s pretty well. Do you remember brooms being hanging over doorways and archways and houses?
Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely. Even the early 90s. I
remember that.
Yeah. It was actually really common. I remember we had some hanging by an archway in our house. So, just as decoration. I actually have two little brooms up there that I bought to hang over the back door, and I've never done it.
I'm just trying to imagine. I mean, I was born in 86. You're saying early 90s. I don't think we had any brooms hanging up in our house.
No. I just remember seeing them all over. Like, everybody, all my friends' houses had brooms somewhere. Or
so weird.
Well, of course they had brooms somewhere. They had hanging up in the house somehow.
Do not wear new clothes to a funeral.
This superstition comes from the Victorian era. And that's all the useful information I could find. But there was a lot of death superstitions to the Victorian era people. And it does surprise me that a funeral wasn't considered another opportunity to buy new and fancy clothes.
Yeah, I mean, I've heard that before, but I think any time I've ever had to go to a funeral, I've had to go buy new clothes. And it's simply because
Wear them to the funeral. Yeah, I only put them away. Yeah. And remember.
I get rid of them, I donate them, because right. I never wear them.
Right.
I mean, it's obviously supposed to be bad luck, because it's don't wear them.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know if this is one that is on any of the list, but I mean, what about the whole, like, you're supposed to wear black to a funeral?
That isn't on our list.
But it really isn't a superstition, that's more custom.
Yeah, it's just a custom.
Because
like,
not,
don't wear black to a wedding, and
yeah.
Wear black to a funeral.
Yeah, okay.
And only a bride's supposed
to... death, so.
The next one is crossing your fingers. To cross one's fingers is a hand gesture.
Really? Damn! You learn something new every day. What can I say?
More you know.
Digging deep.
Professor Amy.
It is a hand gesture commonly used to wish for luck. Occasionally, it is interpreted as an attempt to implore God for protection. The gesture is referred to by the common expression, cross your fingers, keep your fingers crossed. This is another one that I do a lot.
Yeah.
The act of crossing one's finger mainly belongs to Christianity. The earliest use of the gesture.
I was wondering if you were going to say it right.
Had two people crossing their index fingers in the form of a cross.
Oh.
I was thinking you meant like laying one finger over the other.
This is
you're
this,
talking more like.
Well, no, this is what it's. This is the what it is now, but that's what it started out as.
Okay, oh. So what she just said is the crossing of the fingers, like you think today, is what she is telling. But what she was speaking about was the crossing of the fingers in the form of.
Oh yeah, you guys can't see what I'm doing, so that explains it best. All right, some people, mostly children, also use the gesture to as an excuse for telling a white lie. You know, cross your fingers, bind your back.
Yeah.
The origin of the gesture traced back to the biblical kingdom of Israel. Courts of Masonic law would often render verdicts with the phrase, "May God have mercy upon your soul," to reaffirm God's supreme authority over the law. Most judges felt that while they could pass the sentence of death upon a person, they personally did not have the authority to destroy the soul. That only God had the authority to do that. As a result, some judges would cross their fingers when they would say the phrase, as a result of concern for the criminal soul as they said it. All right, our next one. wishes. All right, well, wishing superstitions would be things like wishing on a shooting star.
Yeah.
This one dates back to around 127 to 151 AD with a Greek astronomer who wrote that occasionally out of curiosity or even boredom, the gods peer down on Earth and from between the spheres. He stated that while this happens, stars sometimes slip out of the gap, falling towards the Earth. Shooting stars are hence the indication that the gods are now paying attention to whatever you ask for. So that's why you wish on a shooting star, because the gods are actually paying attention.
Yeah.
Now, that's pretty commonplace here. You know, you wish on a shooting star. In Chile, when you spot a shooting star, you must pick up a stone while simultaneously making a wish. Next one is the wishbone.
That was a really good offense to University of Oklahoma.
Yes. Barry Switzer, right? All right. The wishbone is located between the turkey's neck and its breast, and it's formed by the fusion of the bird's clavicles to the base of the sternum. The elastic bone is crucial for the bird's flight mechanics, and it serves as the spring to hold and release energy while the bird flaps its wings. It is also what connects the turkey to the dinosaur. This tradition originated with the Etruscans, an ancient Italian civilization who held birds to the future predicting as future predicting oracles. The Etruscans would slaughter a chicken and harvest its wishbone and set it out in the sun to dry in hopes of preserving the chicken's divine power. Passersby would pick up the bone in order to hold it in their hand and softly stroke it while making wishes upon it. When Rome came in contact with the Etruscans, they took hold of this custom, and today's ritual of breaking the wishbone first emerged around that time. So, basically, if you don't know what breaking the wishbone is, you get the wishbone of we use the turkey here.
Right.
And you pull, and whoever gets the longer side gets to make a wish.
Yep.
I found some tips
for
tips for winning. Dry your hands. Proper hand placement. You'll want to grasp the wishbone between your thumb and your forefinger and as close to the center point as possible. Leverage. Hold the wishbone in your dominant hand. Be sure to have a solid grip. Using your non-dominant hand, press back against the counter or something nearby. Bonus points for pushing against your opponent.
Bonus points.
Endurance. Breaking the wishbone sometimes can take more than just a spontaneous yank.
Getting ready for a marathon. Wishbone break.
Be sure to be prepared just in case the battle goes on for several seconds or even a minute. I can just see us out there rocking it up before we go to pull the wishbone.
Doing push-ups, jogging in place.
Get cute, lazy tiger.
I'm just seeing two people having like hold the wishbone, like fighting to the death before they can break the wishbone.
They have their like spouse over there wiping the sweat from their brow.
Round three, go!
Get Bruce Buffer in there calling the wishbone. And today in the red corner, we've got
John Madden. And that wishbone's from a turkey.
Be sneaky. You might want to slip away from the dining room table as to tiptoe into the kitchen while the wishbone is still drying out. Assess the wishbone. Which side appears stronger? Make sure you get the film? Good side.
Is this like a coach watching film on the wishbone? Like, okay, well that's strong side right there. That's the weak side. So we're going to blitz from the strong
side. We're going to use the inside bone breaker.
I got this from the Modern Family.
Modern Family Guy?
ModernFarmer.com. All right. Another one. Birthday wishes on the birthday cake. This dates back to ancient Greece. Putting candles on a cake. Baked goods were brought to the temple of Armidas, the goddess of the hunt and the moon, as an offering. They were adorned with candles to signify the glow of the moon. It was believed that the smoke was the vehicle to bring prayers to the gods. That might be the origin of wishing while blowing out the candles. The first birthday cake is believed to be from Germany in the Middle Ages. Young children would receive these treats on their birthdays in celebration called Kinderfest. Candles were placed on the cake, one for each year of the life. An extra candle for the coming year. To represent the light of life, the superstition is to blow out the candles and make a silent wish. Eyelashes. Wishing on an eyelash is common folklore in the mid-19th century. A falling eyelash is placed in the back of the hand before the wisher throws it over their shoulder. If an eyelash gets stuck, the wish does not come true. Cornish schoolgirl version dictates that an eyelash should be placed on the tip of the nose. If she blows it off, she gets her wish. Dandelions. Young girls commonly use dandelions in the 1800s for romantic and oracle purposes. It was believed that if you blew on a dandelion, all the seeds flew away, your loved one returned the feelings. If any seeds remained, they might have reservations or no feelings at all. Children who blew these flowers while thinking hard about topics.
So you're talking about blowing and seeding.
Children who would blow these flowers while thinking hard about the object of their affection. Eventually, these traditions spread to encompass all wishes, and romantic and otherwise. The wishing well. According to European folklore, wishing wells were homes of the deities, gifts of the gods. Water is a valuable commodity. Many early European tribes treated wells as shrines and often placed small statues of the gods nearby. People would come to the wells and pray and ask for assistance from the gods. Although the idea of the gods are watching over the well has faded with history, the tradition makes wishing and giving offerings, usually a coin, to continue. Walking under a ladder.
Walking under a ladder will bring bad luck, excluding, the obvious.
What's the obvious?
That something might fall on you from above.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
The belief that walking under a ladder will bring bad luck seems to stem from ladders forming a triangle with the wall and the ground. This represents the Holy Trinity. And if you violate this by entering the space, it puts you in league with the devil, and you are likely to incur God's wrath. One reason it's bad luck to walk under a ladder is that hangmen used to use a ladder to hang someone from the gallows, and it's believed that if you walked under a ladder, the hangman would turn his gaze your way, or death would notice you. So he would, the hangman would divert his look at the person he's going to hang, and then you'd become the new target. So that was one of the original beliefs in walking under a ladder. And then the Holy Trinity, looking at the religious origin.
Never buy a husband's shoes.
Giving someone a new pair of shoes is unlucky. Although, strangely, it's also said to prolong their life. It's bad luck to give someone shoes as a Christmas present, as it is thought to signify that the receiver will walk away from you. However, if you never give anyone a gift of shoes, it means that you will be doomed to go shoeless in the afterlife. So you have a tough choice to make.
Well, Chad, since you're going to haunt in a man thong, you don't really need shoes either.
Yeah, I'm fine. So.
And it better be a flag man thong, too.
Maybe.
Don't split the pole.
This is one I know. My friends, growing up in high school, always try to keep you from splitting the pole.
Yeah.
I don't know the reasoning behind it, but I know that I would always purposely try to go around the pole just to do it.
Now, this superstition occurs when walking with a friend and encountering an obstacle such as a pole. The superstitious people are encouraged to go around the same side of the obstacle so as not to split the friendship. But if a splitting of the pole happens, saying bread and butter will protect them.
Interesting.
Ah, so that probably understands why I don't have that many.
All right. Crossing the tracks, touch a bolt.
Never heard of this one before.
I've heard of this one.
Whoa. What was that?
Crossing the tracks, touch a bolt.
Yeah, never heard of that one.
This superstition dates back to at least the 1950s in America surrounding car culture. This little trick was said to keep one from becoming pregnant. It was usually coupled with lifting your feet up off the pedals or the floor of the car while crossing the track. I don't think I need to dig into how this is not an effective form of birth control.
I like your little thing on the end there. I should have had April do that more. Should have had all my wives. Just to do that.
Not really. Yeah, I remember being in the school bus, and every time we'd go over a track, you'd touch a bolt on the school bus.
She gets that same thing from putting a piece of cabbage in her wallet. None of it makes sense.
It just happens, right?
Yeah.
All right. Placing a coin on the deceased.
I do this daily. I mean,
in ancient Greece, coins would be placed with the dead to pay Charon to cross the river Styx in the underworld. The term sometimes used is Charon's oval. In pre-Roman Britain, the Celts had a bowl placed on the chest of the body into which people would place food and coins for the dead to use in the next life. Among Christians, the practice of burying a corpse with a coin in its mouth was never widespread enough to warrant condemnation from the church. Magyar custom is to close the eyes of the dead with silver, because if they remain open, we would see our own death captured in them. In Buddhist tradition, the coin is placed in the mouth by the undertaker to pay fees during the departed's long journey. Some gypsies drop coins into the graves of a loved one as payment into heaven. In American military tradition, a coin left on a headstone lets the deceased soldier's family know that somebody stopped by to pay their respect. A penny means you visited, a nickel means that you and the soldier trained together, a dime means you served with them, and a quarter signifies that you were there when that soldier was killed.
Interesting. I didn't know that.
So, a military-type thing.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. Spilling salt.
Spilling salt was held to be an unlucky omen by the Romans, and the superstition remains to this day. The evil may be averted if he who spills the salt throws a pinch of it over his left shoulder with the right hand. In Leonardo da Vinci's famous painting of the Lord's Supper, Judas is known by the salt knocked over accidentally by his arm.
Damn that Judas.
Salt was used in sacrifice by the Jews, as well as by the Greeks and Romans, and it is still used in baptism by the Roman Catholics. It was an emblem of purity and the sanctifying influence of a holy life on others. Spilling the salt after it was placed on the head of a victim was a bad omen, hence the superstition. In some Christian beliefs, the devil hangs about over the left side of the body, looking for an opportunity to invade. Tossing the salt over that shoulder puts it right into the devil's face. Salt is believed to ward off evil spirits in the Mahayana Buddhist tradition, and after a funeral, salt is thrown over the left shoulder to prevent evil spirits from entering the house. In Wicca, it's symbolic of the element earth. It also cleanses an area of harmful negative energy. A dish of salt and one of water are on most altars, and salt is used in many rituals.
The salt one, I've always heard that one. I've never followed any of the...
I know they use salt in Supernatural a lot. They shoot them with salt.
Yeah,
they
make the salt circles.
Yeah, salt circles.
They do the salt circle in Hocus Pocus.
Granny does it in the Beverly Hillbillies. She'll shoot people with shotgun shells that have salt in them.
Circle.
That's gonna hurt like a bitch, because salt in the wound hurts.
That's the point. It doesn't kill you.
Ow.
It hurts a lot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So were you saying that the throwing the salt over the left shoulder, what about the whole spilling the salt? Is that you throw it over your left shoulder?
Yeah, you spill it.
I never remember if it's left or right, so it's your left.
The left. The devil hangs out the left side, because the left is bad. Remember?
Allegedly.
Left-hand path, right-hand path.
But then the devil's also in the cracks in the sidewalk under your feet.
Yes.
So exactly. You never know where he might be.
And 666 is the number of the beast yet.
But if you have
pure love.
But if you have a mirror on your porch, the devil is going to be so infatuated with himself, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, unless he's turning circles on a horseshoe because he can't bridge the gap.
Better hope he doesn't see that magpie.
just pointing out somebody else.
And make sure you sneeze, they don't grab that soul from you.
And wave your arms and call like a bird.
And don't forget cabbage in the wallet.
Yeah. That or bacon.
All right, we have two more left. We have blessing a new home and luck of three.
Okay, so blessing a new home is when you bless the home. Luck of three is three. Luck of three?
You had unluck of three. Dave has luck of three. Oh. You want to do your luck of three?
Why don't you go ahead? Because I just did like three in a row.
Okay. Blessing a new home. Blessing a new home, also known as house healing, house clearing, house cleansing, and space clearing, are rites intended to protect the inhabitants of a house or apartment from misfortune, whether before moving into or to heal after an occurrence. Many religions have house blessings in one form or another. In Christianity, house blessings is an ancient tradition and can be found in Roman Catholicism, Orthodox Christianity, and some branches of Protestantism, and Roman Catholic, Lutheranism, some other ones.
Some ones you don't want to pronounce?
Yes.
Catholicism.
Uh-huh. So we're talking, there's Lutheranism, there's Methodist, and Orthodoxy, and then there's another one that I can't even, I'm not even going to try it. They are usually performed by a pastor who may sprinkle holy water, depending on your denomination, as he walks through every room in the house, accompanied by an occupant of the house, whilst praying for the occupants. House blessings date back to the early days of Christianity, and in Catholicism, the rites taken from the prayer with intercessions and several benedictions, blessed salt and incense may be used. I bless houses and do house cleansing using sage, which is a Native American technique. There was one that I saw using a pink candle and you invite people over and all this stuff. I usually start at the door, go around the door frame with the sage, smudging the sage, and take it to the right and go all the way around the house into cabinets, closets, things like that, making sure to pay special attention to corners, just telling all negative energy that it's not welcome, to fill the negative energy with positive energy and all that stuff, and cleanse houses. So that's just kind of some different ones. There's also some Hindu ones and Buddhist techniques, but...
Yeah. Very interesting.
Now we have the luck of three.
Luck of three. Third time's a charm. An old superstition from Britain states that it is lucky to find three whole grains in a loaf of bread. Three is also closely associated with the Holy Trinity, which can be found in various forms in many world religions. In Christianity, there's the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit. Hinduism has its own Holy Trinity of sorts. There's Brahma, the Creator, Vishnu, the Preserver, and Shiva, the Destroyer. Islam has its three main holy sites in Mecca, Medina, and in Jerusalem. Some pagan traditions celebrate the trinity of land, sea, and air that make up the earth. Modern Wicca sees a woman's life governed by the flow between the maiden, the mother, and crone phases. The Egyptian pantheon hosts the earlier trinity of Osiris, Isis, and Horus. In Norse mythology, Odin, Thor, Freyr, and Freya all have three weapons, artifacts, or magical items. Greek mythology gets in on the act with the triad of Zeus, Poseidon, and Hades. The three fates, Clotho, Lachesis, and Atropos, govern the length of human life. The Celtic goddess Brigid is believed to be the triplet daughters of the Dagda, Brigid the poetess, Brigid the smith, and Brigid the doctor. The day is divided into three phases: morning, afternoon, and night. Only three primary colors are needed to mix most of the other colors. There's the rule of thirds in arts and photography. Three organs are inside the brain. the pineal and pituitary glands, and the central thalamus. In the 6th century BC, the Greek Pythagoreans founded a system based on numerology. For them, the first 9 numbers held sacred meaning. 3 represented harmony, since 1 meant unity and 2 meant disorder. Add the 2 together, and you reach a harmonious conclusion.
So there we have it.
And there's a lot of other 3 stuff. But
yeah. Well, 3, like 3 little pigs, and you got...
3 blind.
They weren't very lucky.
The same thing for 3 blind. Yeah.
Those
go with unlucky, I guess. No. But, I mean, 3 is a fairy tale number. 3 and 7 are fairy tale numbers.
Well, I didn't think I realized this, and I'm probably dumb for this, but, you know, the whole piggy went to the market, and the piggy never came home.
It wasn't that he went and bought stuff from the market. It's that he was slaughtered.
Yeah.
Still pulled at the market.
Yeah, yes. I don't remember where I heard that the other day.
It was on Facebook, I'm sure. That's where I saw it.
Is that what it was?
Well, I finally got a text response from our mom about the cabbage.
Mm-hmm. Oh, really? It took a whole week, huh?
And, it didn't help much.
Yeah, she didn't know what we were talking about either.
My question was, where did you hear about, or where did the, let me just open my phone here.
This stuff is good.
Where did you hear?
Every time I try to talk, Austin's just like,
Dean does that shit too. All right. Where did, I asked her, where did you hear the cabbage in the wallet on New Year's thing? And her response is, Mom and Dad. Why? So, I guess we can dig deep. They're over there eating salt.
No, it's an all
seasoning salt. All right.
So basically, we can dig deeper and ask Nemo, or we can just accept the fact that our family is odd and we keep cabbage in our wallets.
We have our own superstition.
If you tried some, you wouldn't be laughing at us.
It's really good.
Oh, I know it's good. It's just funny because you guys have been eating for like an hour.
Well, that does it for our two-parter on superstitions. And I really enjoyed this one.
Yeah,
I did too.
Yeah, it was great. Sorry for not being prepared, and enjoy all the fumbles.
If there's anything we didn't cover in these, or we covered wrong, let us know.
And still, if anybody knows why you put cabbage in a wallet, let us know.
We still feel crazy.
And next week is a day that's all near and dear to our hearts.
Halloween.
And we're planning on doing this really big dig into the history of it and the lore of it, and
it will release on Halloween itself.
Yes,
I'm gonna go hardcore in the paint with this next. I mean, I'm telling you.
You're gonna do some research.
I'm gonna come prepared. I'm gonna have at least 3 screenshots on my phone.
I was about to ask, are you gonna bring a tablet?
If you're out there, follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter.
Email us at umpnormalcy@gmail.com.
It's umpnormalcy at Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.
Yes, it is.
And we need those followers.
We have gone completely international. We are in 3 different continents now. I think that is freaking awesome.
Very awesome.
Pretty amazing.
So, keep it going. Share us with your friends. Rate, please. We ask that you rate us on iTunes, Google, Spotify, Stitcher, wherever it is that you're listening to us. Rate us, because that puts us out there to get in more people's ear. And we'll be coming at you next week. Until next week.
Keep digging.